Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Bruins Beat. It is again me, Belle Fraser from the Hockey News, joined by Connor Ryan. Connor, how are you? What's going on?
I'm doing well, Belle. Thank you for having me.
It's an honor. Very excited to be here. We were joking last time that Evan handed the podcast over to two BU kids, and once again, BU's dominating again.
I mean, it's one of those things, too, where Evan was, again, he's taking a break, which, again, good for Evan taking a little bit of a rest here, but for my first episode of Poke the Bear, it was me and Scott McLaughlin. It's like, wherever you go now, Evan takes one little break, and all of a sudden, the Terriers, rightfully so, I would say, are running all the best podcasts on the Bruins.
Yeah, literally. And I mean, we started the last podcast like this too, but a lot of exciting Bruins hockey right now, but it feels like in the press box, half of what everyone's talking about is the Frozen Four, BU making it. How are you feeling with that before we hop into Bruins?
I mean, listen, I always feel confident in the Terriers, and then we get to like actual puck drop and then I'm a nervous wreck. So I'm trying not to get too far ahead. We still got a ways to go in terms of the actual games being played. But so help me, Belle, if it's BU and BC in the championship game, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I'm going to say I'm going to watch it, which I will. I'll get some friends together to watch that. But like, it's not going to be fun. Like, even if BU is to win, which would be fantastic. I know you guys will do a great job covering them as you've done all year long, but I am going to be a wreck if it does happen, goes down, because BC is straight up terrifying.
Yep. No, there will be no recap from the Boston Hockey blog because I won't remember the game. I'll just
It's all going to be written in like wingdings, whatever those like the thing is. Or don't mean just exclamation points.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, we talked to Coach Pandolfo today, and I didn't realize it was only the second time BU and BC have both been in the Frozen Four at the same time, which is kind of crazy looking at the Parker-York legacies and how good both the programs were individually. So, but not jinxing it. BU could lose against Denver.
True.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Yes, absolutely.
Anywho, looking at two other games that, you know, for the Bruins, not that they should have been nervous about them, but they were pretty high stakes, Nashville and then Carolina. And Bruins came out and had two of their better performances, I would say, of the last month, complete performances, more playoff style of hockey. Jim Montgomery has talked about wanting his team to be playoff ready. And I think this week is when, you know, I personally believe like, okay, maybe they are. So, I mean, we can talk about Carolina first, but just where are you at with the Bruins after they put together two pretty convincing wins against opponents that are either fighting for their lives or are a top contender this year?
Yeah, I think when you look at the Bruins and the way they're approaching this postseason, and it's something that, not to take a quote from Jeremy Swayman, who's mentioned it countless times, but like how important gaining experience is, and whether that's good experience, bad experience, like this team is going through adversity and they're passing tests at a crucial time. Like we look at like the Bruins team last year where they were just a wagon through and through for the last 6-7 weeks of the season. It felt like you're just going through the motions. Like the biggest priority, we know this team's good. Let's keep guys healthy. Let's not overexert anyone. And now you've got this stretch where the Bruins are playing teams that, you know, are built for the postseason. You look at like, again, Florida Panthers haven't played that well, but they're still going to be a tough out in the playoffs. They come back, they beat that team on the road. You have the Capitals, who again are a fringe playoff team, but you talk about adversity, killing a 4-3 power play in overtime, coming away with a win there. That's another thing that builds character, builds some fortitude for the playoffs. And then, as you said, these last two games, and especially in Carolina, a team that is coming off, I think, back-to-back shutout wins, 8-1-1 in their last 10 games. And when Carolina's on, that's a team that is built for, I think, today's postseason, right? Like, they swarm on the forecheck. They generate a lot of offense from the blue line, which either means puck sailing through, they're getting rebounds, tips, what have you. And the Bruins have answered the call in all these games. And it's good that they jumped out to an early lead, the Bruins, against Carolina. But I think what's impressed me the most in terms of just building their overall game, what's kind of been one of the biggest flaws with this team for a while now, it's been letting teams, you know, get back into these games, not being able to, you know, land the dagger in the third period when they pull their goalie. Last two games, two wins against two very good teams in Carolina and Nashville, they've gotten the job done. And if you're the Bruins and you're trying to go on a long playoff run here, it's going to be a whole lot of those games where you're going to be frantically defending, goalie gets pulled, and you're going to either be trying to kill the clock or try to go for that empty net goal. So I think you look at just the way the Bruins are playing right now. Again, it's not to say that the championship runs back on, but the adversity that they're facing now and the fact that I think they've answered the call there, it's encouraging because at this point, it's all about just, I think, getting ready for what's ahead for this team.
I totally agree, especially with the third periods, closing out games, extending leads too. It started in Nashville, you know, 0-0 going into the third. It was such a tight checking game and the Bruins looked good, but in the back of my mind, it was like, can they stick with it? Can they be patient? You know, again, the classic quote, stick to the process, believe in the process, but it's true. Like, can they believe in how they're playing and kind of not get frustrated with not scoring? And then Charlie Coyle gets that shorthanded goal, which kind of just felt like storybook for the type of game it was. You talk about that adversity and killing off that penalty and getting ahead and then extending that lead. You know, Pavel Zacha and then David Pastrnak both score. And you look at, kind of bled into the Carolina game, looking at those top six contributions. Can talk about the Brazdeau injury, but, you know, the lineup was a little bit shuffled, but the Bruins' big guys are coming out to play when it matters. And I feel like it hasn't been a big worry because they've been leaders all year, but just in terms of consistency with getting on the scoreboard, that top six is looking pretty good and were the reason that the Bruins were able to pull through in both of those games.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that second line of Heinen, Pastrnak, and Zacha, they've been on a roll for about a month now. And it's crazy when you just look at, I think most Bruins fans knew that it was going to be, you know, Zacha and Pastrnak was a good duo to stick together after how well they played last year. But can you imagine like telling Bruins fans like in mid-July, you know, we're at a point here where it's like, all right, Bergeron's retired.
Yeah.
They're not signing Bertuzzi. Taylor Hall has been traded. Imagine like pitching to them like, all right, guys, we got a solution here for the top six. Danton Heinen. You know how rational Bruins fans are and how quick they are to not overreact. They'd be losing their minds. But give full credit to Heinen in terms of just one, how he's played, but how well I think he's meshed with that group. And I mean, the numbers speak for themselves in terms of the Bruins. I think about scored teams 14-4 when that line's been out there this year. And then you look at that Carolina game. It's huge for Brad Marchand to get on the board there as well. Yeah. I mean, he threw the monkey off his back after finally getting that 400th goal. And that's a guy that, you know, is your emotional leader. He's the guy that we know is going to drag this team into the fight. He's going to be the guy that, you know, tries to land a big hit or, you know, gets involved after the whistle if the team is kind of dragging in a period once you get into the playoffs. But to have him feel confident about his game, finally get rewarded on a play in the offensive zone, that's going to be huge for his confidence going into, you know, he's a seasoned veteran, but his first year as Bruins captain, there is that added weight and expectation that I think comes with that.
I totally agree. And you could see the relief. Like you said, he literally threw the monkey off his back and the team was so excited for him too. And that's important. You know, he's a confident guy. He never loses the room, but I think I totally agree with you going into it. He has to have kind of that swagger to be able to be a leader on the ice. And also Morgan Geekie gets the primary, primary assist on that play after moving up to play with Marchand and Coyle. He was on the third line before. He's kind of been a utility man for the Bruins. He's really playing wherever they need him to. But just, I think it goes into the Heinen conversation too, where these bits and pieces that the Bruins brought in have kind of, it's just been a fit. You know, it's not that they're playing the craziest hockey of their careers, but they're able to kind of give them what Montgomery needs. And I guess for you, Brazdeau's still week to week, Montgomery said, but looking at this, you know, Van Riemsdyk on the fourth line, what do you make of the battle for game one positioning now that Brazdeau's out, Pat Maroon is skating, and Danton Heinen and Morgan Geekie are proving that they can handle top 6 minutes?
Yeah, it's going to be really fascinating, Bill, when you look at just the way the Bruins are structured. And it does really suck about Brazdeau because he's a guy that not only, I think, did he fit so well with Beecher and Boqvist, but he's a guy that, like, if James Van Riemsdyk was really kind of struggling and he's still trying to get some traction back, he's dealing with an illness, he's lost some weight. Like, that's really tough to get back up to speed in the middle of the season like that. So it's been tough sledding for him. But you could paint the, you know, a scenario where if JVR is not, you know, playing at a high level, you could easily slot him out for a couple of games, have Justin Brazdeau maybe get on the third line. Maybe that's where Pat Maroon is. And all of a sudden you've got two pretty heavy playoff kind of built kind of guys for your bottom six. And it's a great problem to have. Now with Brazdeau being out, not only does it kind of hurt your fourth line, it throws the rest of the groupings into a little bit of flux here, right? So I do think Geekie's one of those guys that has proven he can kind of play wherever, which is a great help for this team. Curious to see if they keep him up there, whether they go back to DeBrus, because again, we know the script with DeBrusk now. Like, we know that it's going to be up and down in terms of production, but when he is playing impactful hockey and he's bearing his chances, it just changes the entire complexion of the Bruins forward core. When you have that guy who on any given night can be your, you know, your second or third best winger. Like, you got Pastrnak, but he can be right there in some of these kind of takeover games that he's had. But in terms of like where Maroon comes back, like, it's good that he'll be able to at least get into a few regular season games, because he can be a fourth line guy. But as much as I think people paint, you know, Maroon is just this really physical winger that's going to be just playing 11 minutes a night or what have you, he had like some pretty good playmaking this year, especially for Minnesota. I mean, 16 points in 48 games isn't bad for a guy with limited reps. So if he's on your third line and you want to go with more of a puck possession group with Frederick and Geeky, or on the fourth line, what have you, like, at the very least, the Bruins have options. As much as this has been a jumbled together kind of grouping this year, they can kind of tinker and slot these guys all across the lineup. And so far, a lot of the results have been really positive for this team.
Yeah, and not to say Pat Maroon and Justin Brazeau are one for one, because that's not the case. And I do agree that it would have been great to have that option if you wanted a heavier bottom six. But it is nice knowing that if you want a similar look, you kind of have a guy coming in that can do that. But just for Brazeau as an individual too, beyond how the team looks, it's like, you know, he signs in February and comes in, and you kind of thought he was just going to be like an AHL Providence placeholder while the Bruins figured it out. And he really, 2 days ago, we were talking about how he kind of earned a playoff role, even with Pat Maroon coming back. And, you know, it sucks for a guy to kind of make his living, carve out a spot in, you know, he probably didn't expect to be in the NHL this year, let alone, you know, scoring 3 games in a row, 7 points in however many games. So, yeah, you just feel for the guy, but hopefully he'll be able to get back for a playoff run. But as of now, it's funny. I feel like the Bruins, you always think they're out of options and players, and then they just appear out of nowhere.
And we've hit the point now, too, where it's getting close to the playoffs. So as much as I think Jim Montgomery on Thursday was mentioning, like, oh, we'll give you a better update, we're in the playoff week-to-week thing now, where we're going to have any friggin' clue. We're going to think this guy's never going to be back out there, and then, hell, it can be like April 18th or something, and Brazeau's out there. Probably like a separated shoulder, what have you, but the time of the season when these guys are just running through it. So
yeah, we'll find out in August.
Yes, exactly.
Another bottom six guy, Johnny Beecher, love to talk about. But first, a message from our sponsor over at Prize Picks.
Prize Picks is America's number one sports app with more than 3 million members. It is the easiest and most exciting way to get in on the action while you watch your favorite sports and players. You just pick more or less on two or more player stats and watch the winnings roll in. Now get in on the playoff action, win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks as you and the world's best players take the game to a new level during basketball's postseason. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $1,000 in just a few taps. Prize Picks is really simple to play. You can make a pick and submit an entry in less than 60 seconds. This week on Prize Picks, I'm selecting Jason Tatum to dish out more than 5 assists, and for his teammate Jaylen Brown to have more than 22.5 points. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit matchup to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Prize Picks.
Great ad read from Evan. It's like he's here with us.
It's like the ghost of Evan is still here. He can't stay away from the podcasting.
Yeah, even if he tried.
Yes.
But yeah, Johnny Beecher, another guy who came up and, you know, he had a good start to the season, but then the consistency, the punch just wasn't there, gets sent back down to Providence. And here he is also battling for a spot in the game one lineup. Last night he had a fight against Jack Drury, you know, nephew of Terrier great Chris Drury, if anyone cares.
Of course, everyone cares. We're talking about BU greatness here.
National champion.
Yeah, you know.
No biggie. But, you know, not that it was a great fight. It's not one he's going to put on his highlight reel, but I think the fact that he's really showing the coaching staff, the fans, his teammates, that he's putting everything on the line. He moves back to center role with Bocas up on the third line. He's been great from the faceoff dot, but I think he's really trying to show his versatility, that he can be a tough guy. He can play the identity role in the fourth line, but he can also have a scoring touch. So just what have you seen from him in the past, you know, 10 games, and where do you think his postseason kind of ceiling is?
Yeah, I mean, I think Beecher's probably in that same tier with like Brazo before he gets hurt in terms of he feels like he's a lock for the playoffs now in terms of just a fourth line guy that can play the wing, can play down the middle when need be. And yeah, like I think it's obvious when you look at Beecher, where they've really have used him quite a bit is just how good he's at faceoffs. They've had fewer instances where they're losing these critical D-zone draws with a guy like Beecher out there, which has been huge for them. But he's doing kind of the little things, as you said, like that are keeping him in the lineup. Like I think it was Mark Diver who keeps tabs on everything going on with the Providence Bruins of like, you know, Beecher, you'll take the goal here and there. Obviously, you'll take the great faceoff work. But where he's impactful, too, is like he's one of those guys that is so great at skating, has such great acceleration, but he's also 6'3". Like he can throw his weight around. And he's kind of one of those guys that I think fits the mold as to where the NHL is going in terms of like an ideal fourth line guy. Like it's obviously not the Sean Thorntons of the world anymore on your fourth line, but like Beecher, I think kind of reminds me a little bit of a guy like Sean Corrali, who was 6'3", really, really good skater, can hold on to the pucks, tough to knock off the puck, is first in on pucks when he's moving his feet. And that can make a big difference in the playoffs, especially when you have a guy that can beat you to pucks, can hold on to pucks. Again, in the fourth line where they're going to be faced with a lot of really, really tough matchups, sometimes winning like the battle on your shift is just holding the puck in the other team's zone, having the Matthews or, you know, whoever they're matched up against play, you know, chase you with the puck. Like as much as many of those don't register on the score sheet, they don't maybe look good in terms of your Corsi rating or what have you. Those shifts can go a long way towards building into the overall team game. So I think you've seen Beecher, whether it's, you know, stepping up and fighting Drury, we see him landing a few really good hits on the forecheck, winning pucks, all those things. He's doing whatever he can to carve out a steady role. And the face-offs, the occasional goal here and there is kind of just icing on the cake.
Yeah, and he said that. I think it was the game against Philly, the 6-5 win at TD Garden mid-March. He scored that game. But someone asked post-game, like, how much more did it mean that Montgomery had you out there in the last 2 minutes, that he had you taking defensive zone draws in the third period? Like, and Beecher said, of course, you want to score. I'm not expecting to score like Pasta. But, you know, the amount of responsibility and trust I think Montgomery's giving him is different from his first stint in the NHL. And it has to feel good for the confidence. You know, these guys are always like, I'm focused on my game, blah, blah, blah. But it is a mental part of it, too. And I think when you have that believability and kind of carve out a real look for the fourth line for the Bruins, I feel like this has been, we talk about it all the time, but that line struggled to kind of have a real identity in the first half. But I think it's a pride point that Beecher's like, I'm going to lead this line and you're going to know what you're going to get from us night in and night out. And that consistency has been great for them. Just to go back to Carolina too, I feel like we can't skip over Pasternak's goal. Kind of just ridiculous. He made it look so easy, extends it to, I think, 2-0 at that time. But he has, I mean, Carolina has man-on-man defense. So it looked like Jarvis kind of like, was like, do I go all the way down in the corner and follow him there? And Pasternak was like, if you're going to give me this space, I'm going to just roof it on your goalie. Like,
if there's ever a person to like not give space, it's probably like David Pasternak. Like, who else is in that category? Like Matthews with the puck on his stick, McDavid, obviously. It's like, again, at that point, I know you're trying to stick to the man-on-man, but got to make some concessions, some adjustments here and there when you got a guy like Pasternak with the puck on his stick like that. But again, it's a credit to Pasternak in terms of making the most of when there are those lapses in a game. Like it's the same thing when the playoffs come. Like every team knows when Pasternak or Matthews or McDavid are on the ice. It's all about how those players can counter those things, right? And I think that's why, even though Pasternak probably won't finish like top three in Hart Trophy voting this year, I feel like this has probably been his best year overall, because it takes one thing to be a guy who's, you know, has a 60-goal season to rely on that so heavily. But, like, he's not like Ovechkin where it's like, I'm going to be posted up at the left circle waiting for the shots. Like, put the onus on him to be a playmaker and make his line mates better. You know, this is still, again, Zaka's had a very good year. Heinen's been great, but, like, it's not like he's got Dreisaitl on his line, or you look at some of these other guys that have these elite level wingers out there. So for Pasternak to kind of change his game on the fly this year, can score the goals when needed, will make the most of those opportunities when a team kind of gift wraps it like Carolina did. But when you look at just his overall growth with playmaking, a little bit more physicality, which again freaks out some Bruins fans that think he's the worst defensive player or does flybys, what have you. Like, again, we can hit like a we can have a rational take here where it's like David Pastrnak will not be winning a Selke. He's not like Mark Stone. We know that.
And he doesn't need to be.
Yeah, he does. He's not barreling over guys. He's not like Matthew Tkachuk, but he can answer the call when needed. He's not a one-dimensional player by any means at all. And I think you've seen it this year.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it, again, like you said, not to discredit Danton Heinen and Pavel Zacha, but it is true. Like the people he's playing with and the numbers he's still posting while benefiting his line mates' games, I think speaks for itself. And not to compare it to a rival, but like you look at Artemi Panarin of the Rangers, and those two have paired a lot this season. And, you know, he's playing with Vincent Trocheck and Alexi Lafreniere right now, which again are two great players. But I think that's part of the reason Panarin and Pastrnak have been compared. It's like their production and the way that they've elevated everyone around them when not playing with, you know, the super line in Toronto. I think, yeah, maybe he won't be in the conversation, but it makes a lot of sense if he was, in my opinion, for the Hart. We'll look ahead at the Bruins' upcoming game against the Florida Panthers on Saturday, but first, a note from Factor Meals.
I want to tell you about our friends over at Factor Meals. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up your springtime goals. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff. And they're tailored to your schedule. Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. And we're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. So head to factormeals.com/Bruins50 and use code Bruins50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code Bruins50 at factormeals.com/Bruins50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Now, back to the show.
All right, so like we said, Bruins are facing the Florida Panthers on Saturday. Played them last Tuesday, week from Tuesday. And I feel like that almost jump-started that road trip. You know, they ended up going 4-2, which is a great record for being on the road for 6 games. But it felt like the desperation, the emotional buy-in, another level of grit, and kind of just getting to that postseason style of hockey was against the Panthers team that obviously there's history against. But just what are you looking for in this matchup, Connor? I know we talked a lot about the forward lines changing, but Bruins still have 8 defensemen right now. Montgomery's kind of switching it up, he says, based on matchup. Lindholm and McAvoy were still together, and then Peak and Shattenkirk gets a chance. But, I mean, back end and also in general, just how do you think the Bruins are brain game planning against the Panthers team that, like you said, it's been struggling, but it's never going to be an easy game?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the way Florida plays. It's just the perfect kind of, maybe not audition, but the perfect test for the Bruins in terms of what's to come, right? And it's not to say that they're going to play, it's inevitable they're going to play Florida, but you look at just how Florida goes about, you know, generating offense. You look at how, you know, prickly they are after the whistle. Like, all these things are things you're going to face with several teams in the playoffs. And I think it also probably helps out that, one, the Bruins have something to play for. Like, they can really solidify their spot at the top of the Atlantic Division with the win. But also you got Florida, who's, if you've listened to Paul Maurice's post-game pressers last week or two, not very happy. Like, they're really trying to gain some traction here and get back into it. And if you're at Florida and you look at just the way you're playing, what better way to kind of right the ship and reestablish yourself as a team that people thought were a cup favorite with a really good road win against the Bruins. So I think for the Bruins, you look at just the way they're approaching these things. And yes, they'll still be looking at the different lines. I'm sure we'll see the decor switched up again a little bit, even though Montgomery mentioned on Friday how much he liked these reshuffled D pairs with McAvoy, Lindholm, Peak with Grizzly, which was an interesting kind of grouping as well. But I just think you look at just the way the Bruins are facing a team like Florida that, again, the history is there, but I think it's just the way they play and how the Bruins can respond to it. Because, again, Bruins are 3-0-0 against Florida this year, and all these games, they've answered the call. They've elevated their games. They've taken their punches. It hasn't been one-sided at all in a lot of these games. And, again, it all comes down to the experience. Like, if the Bruins are able to come away with another win, deal with the adversity, deal with the physicality that we know Florida's going to bring. I think it's all you can really ask for with the Bruins is they're getting ready for what should be hopefully a playoff run that goes into May and June.
Yeah. And I think what's also important too is proving to themselves and everyone just consistency in their game. You know, they've put together two really good games, but they followed up the Florida Panthers game last week with kind of a dud against Tampa where you really didn't feel the same level of anything, you know. So the two games were great, but I think it's really important for them to come back to home ice after being away for nearly 3 weeks and kind of put on that same type of performance that they had the last 2, 3, 4 games. I think that's kind of a spot where they've struggled, right? Every week it's kind of, oh, it's a different type of Bruins team. And yeah. I think yesterday in the first period against Carolina, it was like, okay, this is Bruins hockey. This is what Bruins hockey should be. So it'll be really interesting to see if they can kind of emulate that against not a tougher opponent, but, you know, there's a little juice there, especially it being at TD and all of that. But yeah, like you said, if they play, I don't want to get overly optimistic because truthfully, I would predict possibly a second round exit, but I think for Bruins fans, I would be really excited with the way they played in the first and third against Carolina, maybe not the second. You know, we talked about it before recording with that double minor where you don't capitalize on, you kind of want to see a more complete performance. But yeah, hopefully they're kind of able to carry that over into, was it 4 games left in the regular season at this point? 5?
4 or 5. Yeah, I'm losing track. At this point, I'm just ready for the playoffs to start. Even if it's Bruins Tampa Bay, which I think a lot of Bruins fans are like, all right, that's probably the worst possible matchup you could get, but I'll take playoffs. There's nothing better than that. And I think I speak for most people being like, get the regular season done, especially once you get to like what they play Ottawa their last game of the year.
Yeah.
We don't need to do that. Just drop the puck and then just skate in circles. Like, we're fine. I don't want to write anything. No, you don't want to write. No one wants to write anything.
We don't want to tweet it. We don't want any.
No, absolutely. If you don't tweet it, it never happens. So
exactly. And how nice of the Bruins to not have any games while BU's in Minnesota.
Exactly. You know, very considerate of them.
Wednesday to Saturday, just so everyone can cheer on BU. So
I mean, it's mostly BU guys anyway, right? Just like the prep war. So
yeah. So all good stuff coming up. Connor, I said I'm trying to do my Evan impression, but what can we expect from you at Boston.com, Boston Globe as the playoffs near?
Yeah, we're going to have you covered every step of the way, whether it's game recaps, features, breakdowns, playoff previews, finally. All that good stuff will be over at Boston.com and the Globes. So you can read it there. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can at ConnorRyan_93.
It's a great follow. One of the best out there.
Thank you.
That was Bruins Speak this week, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for hopping on, Connor.
Yep, thanks.